Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Michael Urie, hello.
Who stars as Hamlet in the new production of Hamlet, Shakespeare's classic, at the Shakespeare Theater Company, January 16th through March 4th. Well, actually, I believe it's been extended to March 4th.
That's right. We got an extra week before we even started. No pressure.
So you can come see it more than once, folks.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming in, Michael.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks
now,
for having me.
Before we dive into the show, a lot of our listeners will have seen you on television, sir. Ugly Betty.
Yeah.
Memories of working on that show with America and just the whole deal.
It was the greatest. We're still very close. The cast remains like a family. We were like a family when it started, because it was one of those shows. We started doing it, we loved it, we loved each other, but we had no idea it was going to be such a big hit. And it was an out of the gate hit right away, and for a lot of us it was our first big break, and so we sort of grabbed each other and held on tight and took the ride together, which is a wonderful thing. You know, I've done lots of jobs since then, and you're usually in a group of people with varying degrees of experience, and then that job, we certainly were. I mean, we had Vanessa Williams, who was a superstar, and we had Tony Plana, who'd been like who played Betty's dad. He'd been working actor for years and years and years, and you'd recognize him from a million different things, but this was a huge break for him too. And then Judith Light joined the show, but we're also, you know, Anna Ortiz and Becky Newton, and even America to an extent, and I hadn't really had a big mm-hmm. break like this, certainly not on television, which is so immediate and so wide-reaching, and our show was internationally successful. So it was a wonderful time, a wonderful experience, and we're still very close. I think all of them came to see the last show I was in. We'll see who makes it down to Washington, but...
See that, America Ferrari? You gotta come.
You better come.
Hamlet here. No, we're excited here. Would you call this Shakespeare's best? I mean, it might be up there towards the top, man.
I mean, it's certainly
less well known. Maybe
it's. I think it's probably the most famous. It could be the best.
It's so subjective.
It is subjective. I mean, you know, some of the themes in it are the most universal, I would say. Mortality. It's really a play ultimately about mortality, I think. It's a revenge play at its core. Hamlet is seeking revenge for the death of his father. And in the process, he decides... he's seeking revenge for the death of his father, and in the process, ponders mortality, ponders what life means, what death means. And that's certainly something we all experience, we all go through, whether it's our own mortality or the mortality of those around us. We all can relate to that. We all know what that is. And through a series of soliloquies and long, very long speeches, Hamlet talks about what it means to be alive, what it means to die, what it means to lose someone, why we have to live, and then what happens to us after we die, and then being ready for death. And I think that people recognize that, and I think that's what's made this play. I mean, all of his plays are so universal. He was, you know, he understood psychology before psychology was a thing.
Yeah.
And so much of what he talked about, Shakespeare talked about, is still baffling to us, that somebody, anybody, could have had all those ideas, all those thoughts, and Hamlet is chock full of them.
Yeah, and it's those questions that I think it still baffles us, because it's those questions that mankind are going to be asking forever, and that's
yep.
what's going to keep this around. But you're saying it's about, you know, life and death, and I mean, that's what the whole to be or not to be is about.
Exactly,
there.
Yeah. I mean, to be or not to be is pondering whether to live or not to live,
yeah.
and, you know, whether to take one's own life or
sort
to...
Sort of a suicide soliloquy.
It is kind of. I mean, it is, and in the end, you know, he's been tasked at the beginning of the play. He's tasked by the ghost of his father. If you don't know the play, this is all going to sound very strange, but
we'll give a plot summary in a minute.
He's been tasked by the ghost of his father to revenge his death. And he's so distracted by all of his life and everything that's going on with him. And the fact that his uncle has married his mother. Mm. And now his father is accusing his uncle of murdering him, that he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know if he should trust this ghost, trust his instincts, Or just end it all. He's so sad. He's so melancholy from losing his father.
What does he say? That it might be better to sleep, but then he said, "Oh wait, but then I might dream." That's the rub.
What happens?
What's the exact line?
It's to sleep perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil?
Exactly.
What will happen to me after I die? I have no idea. That's why we don't just end it, because we don't know what it may be worse. What if it's worse?
Wow, that's mind-blowing.
I know, it is kind of mind-blowing.
Although there is, what is worse? Because there's a little moral relativism here, too, in the theme, right? It's like there's neither good nor bad. What's the line?
But thinking makes it so,
thinking
yeah.
Thinking makes it so, there you go. But I have vague memories of the actual
very good. Yeah. But Hamlet is a religious person.
Yeah.
And so he believes in heaven and hell.
Religious themes in this, too, especially yes, around the time of the writing of it, too.
Absolutely. And he believes in heaven and hell, and he believes in, he has seen that his father, his ghost father, is trapped in purgatory.
Right. Some kind of limbo, this ghost form.
Right, and he's trapped there because he was killed before he was able to purge his soul. And there's even a moment where Hamlet has been trying to find a way to kill his uncle Claudius, who is responsible for the murder of his father. He knows he did it. The ghost told him, but then he finds proof by making his uncle watch a play, which is a whole other story, a long section of the play, but he has an opportunity. He happens upon his uncle alone, and he could kill him. Mm-hmm. He has an opportunity to kill him, but his uncle is on his knees praying, and he says, "No, I can't do it now. I can't do it now when he's fit and set for his passage, mm-hmm. when he's ready to go to heaven. He's just purged himself of all of his sins. Right. If I kill him now, he'll go to heaven. That's not revenge.
That's not how my father got
That's
it.
That's not
yeah.
my, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I gotta wait for a better time here.
He took my father grossly, full of bread with all his crimes, broad blown flushes may. Meaning my father did not have a chance to purge himself of his sins. So that's why he didn't go to heaven. If he'd been murdered after church or after confession, then my father would be in heaven. But that's not what happened. And not that his father was a bad man, but he was the king of Denmark. Right. He was the king of Denmark, so there were, you know, lots of things he had to do to maintain his kingdom, which I'm sure included murder and warfare and a lot of things that would be considered sins that he would need to purge mm-hmm. before he died. So Hamlet deeply believes that. He deeply believes that his uncle does deserve to die, but does not deserve to die absolved.
Do you think that your character, just the arc throughout the whole play for you, also goes through some sort of purge? Like, what would be the moment if we dropped him and whacked you before you had purged your thing? You know what I mean? Like, where would that be for you, where you think you're finally in that moment where you're on the knees praying, quote unquote?
Right, exactly. Well, I've given away so many plot points already, but there is a point where Hamlet thinks he's killed his uncle, but mm-hmm. it's actually not his uncle, it's somebody else. Right. And that is a true sin, and for which he is he's remorseful, and he feels bad, and even though the guy kind of walked into it and didn't brought it on himself,
right?
It wasn't what Hamlet intended, and he does feel bad for that. And he is remorseful several times throughout the play. He's a very smart person. He understands the human condition more than anyone
observant
else in the play.
Person,
observant.
Think.
He's the smartest person in the room, mm-hmm. and he knows not only that he can't kill his uncle without his uncle. He can't kill his uncle if his uncle has purged his spirit or his uncle has absolved his own sins, mm-hmm. but he also knows that he can't do it until he's absolutely certain. And that's very conflicting for him. He saw a ghost. The ghost told him his uncle killed him yeah. and that he should kill his uncle. But is that real?
Right.
Or is that the devil?
Right.
Is that the devil, you know, appearing in a pleasing shape to him? So he's definitely the kind of guy who crosses his T's and dots his I's before making, you know, a decision like murder.
Yeah, absolutely. just that kind of decision. we've drilled pretty far. Let's back up a minute. So we've drilled pretty far down into all the themes, which is fantastic. I could just riff on this with you all day. but along the way there, we've kind of dropped in a couple little plot points, but let's back it all the way up and you know, boil it down for the radio.
Right.
Just a quick, like, if for some reason someone has been under a rock and or never even seen The Lion King or whatever, you know, there's so many pop culture iterations of this.
Absolutely.
Basic sort of plot summary, you know, like forward moving premise style.
Well, the king of Denmark dies and his queen marries the late king's brother, who then becomes king.
Yes. Claudius.
And Claudius.
And Gertrude?
Gertrude is the queen, that's right. And young Hamlet, the son, comes home and is horrified and disgusted that his mother would marry his uncle, who he does not like. And then Hamlet is visited by the ghost of his father, who says, "I didn't just die. I was murdered by my brother, your uncle. You must revenge me." And the play is about Hamlet proving and then enacting that revenge. Proving the death, proving the murder and enacting the revenge.
Who plays Claudius?
Claudius is played by a wonderful actor named Alan Cox, who came through Washington as David Frost in Frost Nixon with Stacey Keach. He's wonderful. He's dripping with charm. Which is
as he needs to be.
Which is fascinating. Yes, it's a fascinating part of Claudius is that Claudius takes over Denmark and changes everything. King Hamlet was this beloved guy who everyone revered, and he kept the kingdom happy and prosperous. And now here's Claudius, who is going to start snatching up lands. But
doing it in a little bit with some charm. He can lure people and convince them and manipulate them.
Beginning with Hamlet's mother, Gertrude.
Yeah.
They really do have a good relationship. She's completely smitten with him. Who knows when that began, whether it began after the death of King Hamlet or whether it happened before. But it's there. It's real. And she's all in with him.
Who plays Gertrude?
Gertrude is Madeline Potter, a wonderful actress named Madeline Potter, who plays my mother. She's not old enough to be my mother, but she's happily taken.
Who's your Horatio?
Horatio is a wonderful actor named Federico Rodriguez, who I met doing this play and said, "We're best friends."
Best friends in the show. We have to be in real life.
In the show, we're best friends, and in real life, we've become pretty good friends. And he's a terrific actor that I didn't know before, but Horatio's a tough part because he doesn't say much, but he's very vital to Hamlet. He's the only person that Hamlet really trusts. Mm-hmm. And the relationship is key. I played Horatio, actually, about 10 years ago.
Where at?
At the South Coast Rep with Hamish Linklater as Hamlet, who was wonderful. So I get it. And you know, it's a tough part, and it can be maddening because you have so little to say. And
so much to say, but so little to say it with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So few words. Yeah. And this guy's doing great. We call him Fed, and he's doing terrific. And
Fed?
Federico is his name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, is that part of the spying thing? Now we're bringing the Feds in?
Oh, no.
Here?
Oh, okay. Fed is short for Federico.
Gotcha.
And we don't call him whore. Short for Horatio.
Oh yeah, that's better. I'd rather. It depends what context, but no. Fed makes more sense.
Fed, yeah.
Yeah. What are some of the other characters? Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are old friends of Hamlet from back in the day, from like high school, mm-hmm. who the king and queen bring to cheer Hamlet up. So Hamlet's been walking around with a dark cloud over his head, and it starts because he can't believe his mother married his uncle. But then it becomes he doesn't know what to do because he saw a ghost and he's supposed to revenge the death of his father. So in order to cheer him up / find out why he's so depressed, they bring Rosencrantz and Guildenstern to spy, essentially. Michael Caine, our director, he's really encapsulated this entire production inside this idea of espionage and surveillance mm-hmm. and spying. It's really a play, and it is in many ways, about a world in which no one is, there's nothing really private. No one is safe, and anyone could be listening at any time.
Are you performing this down at the Spy Museum too? Because this
one around the corner from the Spy Museum at the Harmon Center.
But in all seriousness, though, like talk about how that's. I mean, I need not say it, but how it's so timely today. I mean,
well, yes. I mean, the idea that we hear stories about our phones being everyone's phone can record every conversation that you have. It's very terrifying. It's almost Black Mirror esque. Yeah. Oh, nice. You know, and there are scenes in the play. Michael Kahn, our director, has created moments in the play that aren't necessarily in there where characters are listening. There are security cameras. It's modern dress. We're doing it sort of a modern take.
Oh, I want to get into that in a second.
Yeah, yeah. Where characters are listening. Where. Characters may be bugged. Somebody might be around a corner and
to spy or not to spy.
and that is enhanced in our production, but that's in the play. Yeah. I mean, in the play, there are scenes where Claudius and Polonius say we're gonna lure Hamlet here, mm-hmm. and then send in Ophelia, Polonius's daughter, Hamlet's girlfriend, mm-hmm. and see what she gets out of him.
Right.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, same thing. They're gonna see what they can get out of Hamlet. They're gonna try to dupe people.
Yeah.
And my gosh, look at the world we're in right now. People having conversations, wandering around the West Wing.
Who's wearing a wire and who's not?
I mean, exactly.
Who's leaking? Yeah.
Who's wearing a wire? For what purpose are you listening in?
Right.
What do you plan to do with the information you hear?
Right.
Very interesting.
So fascinating. All right, so you kind of alluded to it with the spy talk, but
right.
I want to go a little more into, I mean, even just visually or, you know, how it sounds like you've kind of modernized it in a way.
Yes.
Which I know Shakespeare Theater Company has done a lot with past productions from Macbeth to other things.
Well, but, you know, they just closed a production of Twelfth Night that took place in an airplane terminal. That play is about a shipwreck on an island. This version was about a plane crash. And
they're universal. That's what's so great about his works. Like, it can be adapted.
Yeah, yeah. And then sometimes you get like a little stuck and you're like, oh, well, should this word be this? And should, you know, I mean, obviously, like, we're not putting it in America, but we're not really putting it in Denmark. I mean, it's Denmark, but it is a world of surveillance and espionage. And it feels very much that we went from sort of an elected king in a democratic world.
Right. Duly elected king, yeah.
To an elected king. Claudius is elected.
Right.
But, and that's in Shakespeare's play, by the way. He is elected. He sort of turns the world into this authoritarian regime where you do what he bids and secrets are kept and ambassadors are sent out to sort of take lands and take. And we're seeing it happen in the world. You know, Michael talks a lot about Hungary and what's happening in Eastern Europe and who knows where else that might start happening. And I think there are lots of, you know, certainly lots of themes in our play. We're not trying to evoke anything that's happening in America.
Not a direct comparison.
Or anything that's happening, anywhere, really. Right. But you will think about the world.
Absolutely.
As we know it while watching this version of Hamlet.
Absolutely. That's great. How does that actually manifest itself visually? Like, are we in modern garb as well?
Yes. We're in modern dress. People are in suits and dresses and we're using phones, cell phones.
Are you not holding a skull in this one?
No, there's still a skull.
There's still a skull.
There's still a skull and there's still a duel, a sword fight duel, but our sword fight duel at the end of the play is done with sabers and we have these wonderful, you know, fencing jackets and masks and technology when one gets hit, there's a light goes off and it's like you see in the Olympics and
like in fencing.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Yeah. Because the people often forget, but in Hamlet, when they sword fight at the end of the play, that is a game. It's not a fight. It's a game. Mm-hmm. It becomes more, but it starts as a game. Spoiler alert. But
I don't know if we can spoil. I mean, most people are familiar, right?
Oh, yeah,
right.
I mean,
we'll keep some secrets.
It is called the tragedy of Hamlet.
Yeah,
so you have to walk in knowing this doesn't go well.
That's the form.
Yeah, but we use cell phones, and you know, for example, there's a storyline about the love letters that a particular love letter that Hamlet has sent to Ophelia, and in our version, it's a text, and the letter gets confiscated.
Any emojis or. skull emoji.
Well, and for example, the ghost who appears before these guards on the rampart in our production, in Michael's production, appears first on a surveillance camera.
Ah,
so you see the ghost.
Like some found footage,
paranormal activity. Which is very exciting, a very cool, exciting thing. And then and we have these surveillance cameras all around the stage. So the idea is that like somebody could be watching at any time, which is true in the play. I mean, and it's absolutely based in the text. He didn't, sometimes in Shakespeare plays, people will plant a conceit on top of something. This is definitely not that. It's absolutely based, within the play.
And being here in Washington, D.C., we don't know who will be watching at any time. There could be a dignitary or two show up in the audience. What's it like performing in such a culture
town? It's very exciting. When I went to see, you know, the 12th night that just closed, I went to see it one night after rehearsal and sat right behind Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
There you go.
And I have very exciting. And, you know, and it was 12th night. It wasn't Hamlet. It wasn't like everyone was looking to her to see what she thought. But people coming to see Hamlet, it will make you think about Washington one way or the other. You will think about politics. It's a political play. It's also a domestic play. It's about family struggles, and you can do it. It's a fascinating play. You know, like when the Mel Gibson Hamlet, the film, which is great.
There's been a lot of films, right?
Yeah, there are a lot of films.
Laurence Olivier, a lot of them.
Yeah, Laurence Olivier, Kenneth Branagh, Ethan Hawke, and you can do it without any of the politics. You can do it just about a family. It works. Our version isn't that. It you definitely feel the weight of government. So doing it in Washington, it's fascinating. It's
right
very
down
exciting.
The street from Spy Museum too. You guys are right down in the same neck of the woods.
Like around the corner. Yeah. It's right there.
Right down in Chinatown Gallery Place.
Absolutely. I bike by the Capitol building every night. On my way home from rehearsal.
That's so great. Yeah. So wait, tell me a little bit more about you then. Are you based here now, or where are you headquartered?
I live in New York. Okay. I'm here for the duration of the show. Happily, it's very very exciting. Anytime you get to work on a great play like this, but I love especially big hard plays like Hamlet. It's great to be away from home because my whole life is the play.
Right. You just sink yourself into it. Yeah. And that's your world.
And I can really like immerse myself in the play and in the world and not have to worry about my real life. And, I mean, it seeps in from time to time, but, but I feel very taken care of here, and it's a wonderful, huge, wonderful company. And they know what they're doing, especially when it comes to Shakespeare. Because like sometimes a theater will put on a Shakespeare play, and it's like, oh wow, we need all these actors, we need all these sets, we need all this time. And this company knows that. This isn't their first rodeo.
This is not their first rodeo at all.
But I'm sure they've put Shakespeare plays in rodeos before.
Ooh, there's a new idea. We'll
Taming of the Shrew with the rodeo.
The rodeo version of Hamlet would be interesting. You've been more than generous with your time. Thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Again, it's at the Shakespeare Theater Company from January 16th through March, extended through March 4th.
Yep, come see us.
Thank you so much. Mike Ayuri.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.